I'm a desperate man. Send lawyers, guns and money. This shit has hit the fan.
Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Show. Episode number 68, to be exact. And the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop.
This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Thanks for listening. If you're tuning in for the first time or you're relatively new, I want to let you know this is a practical firearms show. The reason it's practical, the reason I keep it rooted in common sense is because I am not an ex-law enforcement guy or an ex-military guy or a gunsmith or a combat trainer or anything like that. I'm probably like a lot of you who listen to this show. I'm just an ordinary guy. As a matter of fact, my profession is one of the most hated professions in the world. No, I'm not an attorney. I would say an attorney is probably the second most hated profession. No offense to all you attorneys out there. I tell you what, when I need an attorney, they're my best friend. No, I'm in sales, which is probably, if it's not number one, it's the second most hated profession. So anyway, I'm just an ordinary guy trying to make a living, just like probably a lot of you. What I do happen to really love are these instruments called handguns. These things that save our life. You know these things with triggers on them that shoot a projectile that save thousands of lives every year? Yeah, that's what I like. And almost about 5.5 years now, I've been carrying a gun almost every day. And so it's something that's a passion, it's a hobby of mine. So this is not a profession. I don't do this for a living. I don't do this podcast for a living. I just do it because it's a lot of fun. So what am I going to talk about today? By the way, if you hear the background noise again, guess what? As I am so often, I am back in my vehicle. I got a little bit of a drive here to get to my next call. I might get there before I'm done with the podcast, so I'll sit in the parking lot and finish up the podcast before I go see these people. But I'm going to get into a little bit of accuracy and combat shooting techniques and a concept called shoot 'em to the ground. Now, I just got done telling you I'm not a combat trainer, but I watch a lot of videos. I study a lot. I practice a lot. I've been to a few courses and things, and so I'm just going to kind of give you an everyday perspective of it and what I think is reasonable and what I think is not reasonable. Again, it's my opinion. My opinion will come out. I'll just warn you about that. Before I get into that, couple of quick announcements. This is being recorded in advance, but by the time you hear this, we're going to be real close to starting the Freedom Raffle. So go to handgunworld.com and check out the Freedom Raffle. You'll see a button on the page to take a look at that. Also, my YouTube channel. Man, I'm sorry, folks. I just have not had a chance to post some new videos up, but some of you I know haven't looked at it because I look at the number of views, and there's some of them you haven't looked at on there. So go to my YouTube channel, Handgun World Show on YouTube. And another announcement is go to the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Join the forum. It's a great place to interact not only with me, but all the other podcasters and a whole bunch of members that like to listen to shows and are just a good, friendly bunch of people. I learned a tremendous amount on that. All right, that's enough of the announcements. There's two things I don't like to do with my show. I don't like to make it real commercial, and I don't like to make it real political. I'm respectful of your time. Plenty of other good shows for that out there. So let's get into shooting them to the ground. All right, which, you know what? Let's face it. You guys know that I'm a big fan of IDPA and the shooting sports. But in real life, that's what you want to do. Shoot them to the ground. I mean, you know the old saying, they say just keep on shooting them until they are no longer a threat. And a hit is a hit. A hit on your target is a hit. I mean, if you hit them in the hand or you hit them in the arm, is that going to stop them immediately? Well, no, it's probably not going to stop them immediately. But you know what? If you hit them in the arm, You're probably going to make your adversary stop and think. You might make him change directions. You might slow him down a little bit. That precious quarter of a second or half a second of time that you buy could be enough time for you to get another shot on the way. So that's what I'm talking about. Hits are hits. So many people spend so much time thinking about what kind of groups can I make my gun do. And every once in a while, I poke fun at some people that have accurized 1911s. Nothing against you folks that have 1911s. Matter of fact, I don't know if I ever told you this before. Maybe I haven't. I got started shooting 1911s. That's how I started in the whole shooting sports. I had two Kimbers. One was a Kimber Grand Raptor, and the other was a Kimber Target Match, a rare gun I probably should have hung on to. So I love the 1911s, don't get me wrong, but once I started figuring out that reliability was supreme in any situation, and that I really didn't need an accurized 1911, those guns actually ceased becoming part of my collection. I wish I had the Kimber Target Match back, I'll tell you that. Fine gun. Anyway, I digress. The point I'm trying to make here is don't go spending several hundred dollars accurizing that beautiful 1911 that you bought. Out of the box, it's probably good enough for defensive purposes. If you want to go to bullseye match shooting, then go to bullseye. Then spend all the money you can afford to accurize that thing and get it spiffed up for bullseye. But self-defense, almost any modern handgun out there is going to outshoot the shooter. And you know what's interesting is I've read some things on the internet lately I want to share with you. I'm not going to name names or anything like that. I don't want to call people out because, you know, who am I? I'm just an average Joe. But some people put stuff out there like they're complaining that they have to shoot 3,000 rounds through their gun to make sure that it's hitting where they want it to hit and that they feel comfortable with it. And it's a complaint, all right? And they don't feel like they should have to shoot a couple thousand rounds through their gun to get the hang of what they're doing. I've never understood that. You know, this is a commitment, folks. Carrying a gun and defending your life is a strong commitment. And let's talk about your profession for a minute. I don't know what you do, okay? But I can tell you what I do. I have to study all the time. I have to study up on my competitors. I take all kinds of sales training classes. And anybody who is a physician, anybody who is an attorney, anybody who's an engineer, and so on and so forth, and I could name 100 different professions, if you really want to be real good at what you do, don't you have to kind of get some training? Don't you have to make a commitment to it? Now, I know some of you might be thinking, oh, Bob, it's just a job. You know, it's just the way I go. It's just a place I go so I can get money to pay the bills. Okay, I know. Been there, done that. I happen to love my job, but I've had a lot of jobs that I hate before I got this one. But in order to be good at something, you have to make a commitment, a strong commitment. So where am I going with this? If you're not willing to commit 3,000 rounds of practice, now, I'm not saying you have to go out and shoot 3,000 rounds in a month. Okay? But whatever gun you have, you've heard me talk about the 1,000-round trigger job. That's minimum. Get used to your firearm. Train with it. I was real glad to hear Eric at the Handgun Podcast talk recently about quit buying more guns and get some training. It's so true. I agree with him wholeheartedly, and most of you, if you've been listening to my show long enough, you know that I talk about training, practice, training, practice. What's 3,000 rounds? Come on. Is 3,000 rounds, is your life worth that? That's what I want to know. So quit complaining about having to shoot 3,000 rounds. You know, that's just, it's part of what it takes. Now, I listen to other podcasts. And I have a lot to learn. I have just as much to learn as anybody else listening to this show. And I was listening to Rob Robideau's Personal Armament podcast. And back on the 16th of April, he had a podcast on defensive accuracy, and his guest was awesome. Rob did a great job, too. His guest was really good. And I like what his guest talked about, the bench rest accuracy of your gun defensive accuracy and combat accuracy. And I got to say, I never really looked at it that way before. I never really looked at the fact that there's three different types. I've always thought that there's inherent accuracy and then shooter accuracy. Inherent accuracy is what your gun can do. When they put your gun on a bench rest, your handgun, and they use every, you know, piece of every instrument they can think of to fire that thing without disturbing the sights whatsoever, it measures the capability of your gun. It tells you what your gun is capable of doing. You know what? Every modern handgun out there produced today, with the exception of a very few, and I don't want to pick on some of them out there, are capable of giving you enough accuracy for defending yourself at typical handgun distance. Now, let's talk about 25 yards. Is 25 yards a typical handgun distance? I would say that the answer, no. It's not typical. Might you find yourself taking a shot at 25 yards? Sure, but I'm not going to say that that is going to be the norm. I think you got some explaining to do if you're shooting somebody with a handgun at 25 yards. What do they say? Typical is, what, 5 to 15 feet? Okay, 15 feet being 5 yards. So, any handgun out there, with the exception of a very, very few, they're good enough at 5 yards, folks. Don't get so hung up on what the gun will do. Worry about what it is that you can do. So I really like that comparison. Bench test accuracy, and then combat accuracy. See, I used to confuse combat accuracy with self-defense. And listening to that podcast that Rob put out with his guest, whose name I can't remember, I'll look it up and I'll put it in the show notes and link to it. And by the way, if you haven't listened to that podcast, I'll put a link to it in my notes as well. Listen to that. But anyway, his guest talked about defensive accuracy, which is most what civilians are going to find themselves in. You're going to find yourself in a defensive situation. Combat is what the military is going to talk about. And, you know, the military is going to measure accuracy with their rifles at 300, 600, maybe 1,000 yards. That's combat. Military sees combat at that distance. I've never served, but it's common sense. That's you know, military is going to engage threats multiple hundreds of yards away with rifles. And sometimes shotguns, they'll be doing close quarters combat. And then, of course, pistols. And, you know, the military does not lead with a pistol. The military does not go into a combat situation leading with a handgun. So I really agree with that podcast. I don't think the combat accuracy is a good thing to measure for civilians when they're measuring how accurate do they have to be for self-defense. I hope the day never comes that we have to use combat accuracy to defend ourselves. You know what that means? That means that literally all hell has broken loose. And it is absolute mayhem, folks. And you know the dreams that some internet commandos have about hordes of zombies marching in lockstep from 300 yards away, and they have these dreams with their AR-15 and their aim point picking these guys off, you know, as they're, you know, marching and hooting and hollering, and they're dropping these zombies one after the other and doing reloads and sticking a fresh mag of 30 rounds of 223 and laying down all the suppressive fire and all that. I mean, have you ever read some of that stuff? You know, that is where combat accuracy would come into play, but how realistic is that? You know, folks, if we find ourselves in that situation, we got a lot bigger problems than our AR-15s and 308s can handle. So, again, I'm glad I listened to that podcast because it clears it up. Defensive accuracy is what, in my opinion, unless you are a military person tuning into this show and you're looking for combat techniques, you're not going to find it here if you're a military expert tuning into this show. That's not me. Defensive accuracy is what we need to focus on. And so shooting them to the ground is basically going to be, what do you have to do to be able to neutralize your threats? Now, I have an audio soundbite I'm going to play for you soon. A couple of them, actually, that are really good, because I don't want to do all the talking in these podcasts. I want you to hear from other people, too. Other people that have thought this stuff through, practiced it, teach it, train people on it, so on and so forth. And so when I analyze all the pistols that I own, and I, you guys have heard me talk about the pistols that I own, all of them, every one of them gives me acceptable defensive accuracy, 5 to 7 yards or less. You know, I hear so much chatter about sights and sights and stuff like that. I've talked about sights, and I've analyzed sights, and I've probably spent too much time on sights, because realistically, how often are you going to use the sights? I find myself in IDPA matches, whenever the targets are 5 yards or less, I'm not using sights. I'm bringing that gun up, and just basically by feel, I'm getting hits. Okay, they may not all be zeros, okay, but they're hits, all right? And in a real-life situation, they're hits that would at least slow down my adversary. Every once in a while, I miss. Of course, we all miss. Sure. And I realized that one of the mistakes I made in the Texas IDPA match was I had a goal of trying to zero out as many stages. Well, you know, I got to slow down and I got to take my time and I have to get a good sight picture and I have to, you know, focus on that front sight and make sure I put that thing in the zero ring, which is fine and dandy for the Texas State IDPA match. Actually, it wasn't because I was too stinking slow. I'll work on that. But that slow shooting isn't going to probably help me too much in a self-defense, a real-life self-defense encounter. So the rest of the year, I'm going to work on speeding up and getting a quality hit. So all my guns, as I analyze them, they're all good enough. And I can fire all of them rapidly enough to be able to get as many shots as I need. You know, I'm a firm believer in capacity, as I've told you many times. Now, I carry a couple of mouse guns that are single stack, but everything else that I own are double stack guns, because mouse guns are my backup guns. They're not my primary guns 99% of the time. There are some occasion where a mouse gun's all I've got on me, and so I've got an extra magazine so I can hopefully find some type of concealment and then reload. Or at least hopefully my threats, if they are coming at me, they're neutralized, so I can take a couple seconds real quick to reload and keep on fighting. So unless you have a pistol that is just absolutely horribly made, or there's definitely something bad wrong with it, and it can't shoot a reasonable group at 7 yards, then don't worry about it. Okay? If your pistol is that bad, in that bad a shape, send it to whatever manufacturer made it, or take it to a quality gunsmith and say, hey, look, I need accuracy at 12 yards or less. And I think you'll be well defended. Now, with that said, I want to go ahead and cut to the very first audio soundbite that I want you to listen to. Hang on a second, though, here. I am driving, and I got somebody here in front of me that forgot which side the gas pedal is on. All right. Got a little distracted there. Sorry, folks. I want you to listen to this. This is Matthew Temkin, and it's on tactical point shooting called Shoot 'Em to the Ground. He's a law enforcement instructor. And you know what? This is also a video. I'm going to post a link to the video. You got to watch this, too. You'll be able to gain a lot just by listening to the audio portion, but you got to listen to this. He makes some really good points. I'm going to summarize and inject some of my opinions when he's done. But listen carefully to this. I think you're also going to find out this guy is definitely from the Northeast. He's definitely he's got to be from New York or Jersey or someplace like that. All right, here you go. Matthew Temkin, Shoot 'Em to the Ground.
Let's talk about vertical tracking. You may be taken by surprise. Matter of fact, you probably will be taken by surprise. And you may have to simply, from a holster or from a fanny pack, or just draw the gun and start shooting. All right? And we will show this. But basically, you may have to start shooting over here and basically work your way up to the head. And that's all vertical tracking is. The simplest way to explain this is to simply change the focus of your eyes. Start focusing over here. Then focus over here. Then focus over here. Then focus over here. The key concept is to do it non-pause shooting. It can't be bang, 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 bang. It has to be boom, like this. Just one continuous motion. And we'll demonstrate that live fire. As you can see, the shots are all almost like a zipper coming straight up. Starting at the belly, up here, a couple over here, and then finishing up in the head. Fast, non-pause shooting, very accurate. Now, I'm going to get a little bit closer, and I'm going to repeat this drill from the holster. Multiple assailants. It can happen, it does happen. For many, many years, police departments would train their men to come over here, fire two shots, come over here, fire two shots, come back and fire two shots as needed. According to Colonel Applegate, that was not a good way of shooting. Multiple targets should be on the move, and the technique should make sure that your shot doesn't miss. And the technique is very, very simple. All I'm going to do is move in to each bad guy, each target in this situation. For example, I'm going towards over here. I'm going to go bang, bang, then turn. Go over here, turn again. Go over here. If you do it this way, it's impossible to overswing. If you went over here, you may very possibly overswing. But if you shoot while either moving in or simply lunging in, it'll make your shots that much more accurate. And now let's do it live fire.
Okay, the first technique that he talked about, he calls it vertical tracking. I call it the zipper technique. Give him a nice zipper. Shoot him center of mass and just start shooting straight up all the way to the forehead. I know some of you, that's gruesome stuff, Bob. Yeah, I know. But it's probably a lot more gruesome if you don't shoot the guy. What he's going to do to you is gruesome. All right? I mean, this is serious business, folks. As I mentioned, use your guns. If you're going to draw that thing, if that gun's going to clear the holster, be ready to fire and be ready to end the threat. Plain, simple. I mean, you know, do you disagree? Send me some comments if you do. And did you notice the point that he made about no pause shooting? I mentioned a couple of podcasts ago, this is one of the bad habits that I believe you can develop from competition shooting, where you double tap one target, wait, double tap another target, and you know, and then wait, and then double tap another one, and then you know, a lot of shooters do that because they're checking their shots. The first target they shoot, they want to see where they hit, see what the group sizes were, see if they need to make up a shot or two, and then go to the next one. Don't do that. In my opinion, when it comes to self-defense, you want to. Obviously, I'm not saying spray and pray. I'm not advocating that kind of method, but I'm saying don't be pausing. No pause shooting. All right, it should be a fluid motion. If you're going to fire four shots, they should hear bang, 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 bang. Or even probably more smoother than that. Bang, 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 bang. All right? That's the kind of rhythm that I think you should be developing as a shooter. And I think that's the point that he's trying to make in that audio soundbite. And you'll also notice when you watch that video that the first couple shots he takes that are going straight to center of mass, straight to the body, he's not even looking at his sights. And realistically, that's how it's going to happen. So, you know, once you get that gun out of the holster and you got that thing prepared to shoot and you got your arms extended, you're probably going to fire the first couple of shots, especially if it's close range. Then maybe once you get up into the upper chest and the neck area, or of course the head area, as you're doing the zipper technique, you know, then you might be looking at your front sight. You better be looking at your front sight. But the first couple, no sights at all. I wish they would actually do this. I wish they'd set some stages up like this in IDPA. I got a feeling they don't do it because of safety reasons, but you know, if they can train these at a combat training course under the supervision of an instructor, then how come they can't do this kind of stuff under the supervision of the safety officers in IDPA? It's a good question. I'd like to get some of you, see if you can answer that question for me. Now, the other thing I really liked about that is when he was talking about shooting multiple targets. Avoid sweeping your gun. Move in towards the target. You know, a couple of things that helps you with moving in towards the bad guy is that, first of all, you're getting a closer shot. Second of all, you're not sweeping. You're not all of a sudden starting left and then sweeping your gun to the right. You're gonna overcompensate that way. And you could be firing shots and you don't know where they're going. And that's dangerous too. We certainly don't want that. We don't want shots flying around. We don't want bullets flying around that we can't control. Remember, you're responsible for every bullet that leaves the muzzle of your gun. Whether it overpenetrates or misses, you're responsible. That's what frustrates me so much, when people don't get training, when they can't hit the broadside of the barn and they think that they're able to defend themselves. Maybe you can defend yourself, but at what cost? Where are your bullets going to go if you fire that gun, folks? If you're the kind of person that only goes to the range once a year and fires one box, you know, of ammo and make sure your gun's functioning properly, of course, in my opinion, 50 rounds a year is not an accurate measure of whether your gun functions properly. But if you're one of those kinds of people and you're under high stress and your bullets are flying all over the place because you didn't get training, first of all, are you really defending yourself? And second of all, how much of a danger are you to other people out there? I think you're a lot. So the more you train, the safer you're going to be in more ways than one. You're going to be able to defend yourself better, and other people that happen to be in the area are going to be a lot safer because you're hitting your target. So I highly recommend the techniques that Matthew Temkin shows in that video. And basically it's stuff that Colonel Rex Applegate taught. I respect him too. So check that out. I think you're going to like it. I've got to my stop here. So what I'm going to do is, this would be a good time for a good 30-second pause here. And here's a little musical pause, and then you're going to hear an announcement. Got a cool little thing for you to listen to here. Actually, after you hear the music, I want you to listen to something for about 5 minutes. It'll get your attention, no doubt. Listen to it, and I'll have some comments for you when it's over. Here you go.
Him and then one.
Yeah, he's trying to get in my back door again.
Who is?
945 Tennessee.
Okay, who is?
But this is Ryan, I guess.
Ryan, this is a boyfriend, a friend?
No. I've been having a lot of problems with him. Please.
Okay, they're going to be on their way. Okay, did he come in a car?
I don't know. He's trying to get my back door.
Okay. Has he been talking to you, or how do you know it's him?
No,
did you see him?
No, I don't. Somebody's trying to get my back door.
Okay, why don't you stand away with me and, you know, until the police get there in case anything happens.
He's in the back door.
He's at the back door. I get it. They're going to be on the way. I just want to stay on the phone with
okay.
you until the officers get there, okay?
Okay.
What kind of car does he drive, or does he drive?
Ford Explorer, dark blue.
Okay. And is he pounding on the door, or what is
yes,
he?
Yes, yes, he's trying to get in.
What does he look like?
I don't know. Well, he's got a goatee. And,
is he white, black, Hispanic?
He's white. He's trying to get in my door.
Okay, where are you at in the house?
I'm in the living room.
Okay, can you get into a room with a lock on it?
Yes, I can.
Okay, do you have a cordless phone?
Do I have a cordless? Yes,
yeah.
I do.
Okay, try to get into a bedroom or a bathroom or somewhere with a lock on it, okay?
Okay,
that way, in case anything happens.
He's in the back. He's not in the front. He's in the back.
Okay.
Okay.
Did you see what he was wearing at all?
No, I can't see nothing. I put something over the window so he couldn't see in.
And are you going to a bedroom, or where are you
yes,
going?
Yes, I'm in the bedroom.
Okay. I want to tell you when it's safe to come out, okay? Hang on 1 second. I want to let you know where the officers are. Does he normally park in front or in the back?
He broke through the window again.
He broke through the window. Is he
yes.
in the house?
Yes, I think he is.
And you're still locked in the bedroom, right?
Yes.
Okay.
What? He broke the window. He's in the house now.
Does he know to carry weapons at all?
I got one today.
You got one what?
I got a weapon today.
Okay. A gun? You
yes.
have it? And is it in the room with you?
Yes.
Okay. Where is the gun actually? Is it locked up or is it in your hand?
No, it's in my hand.
Okay.
Let him know she's got a gun in her hand in her room.
Do you hear him in the house?
Yes.
Okay, where is he at?
He's downstairs.
He's downstairs. Okay, and I take it, and if you're in the bedroom, that means you're upstairs?
Yes.
Okay. I have several officers on the way.
Okay. Please.
Yeah, they're coming. 911. Is anybody with him? Did you hear anybody else?
No.
No? Okay. Does he know you're there?
Evidently. Or no, he might not. I don't have my vehicle here. He slashed my tires the other day.
Okay, and that door is locked, right?
Yes.
Okay. You're making sure.
Ellis?
What? Is his last name Bergner?
Ellis.
Hello?
He's trying to get in the house.
She put the phone down.
Okay. Yes, no. I am. I'm on the phone. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they're already on the way.
I'm so scared.
Yeah, I know. And it feels like forever. And it's only been 2 minutes. Is his last name Bergner?
Yes.
Yes, his last name is Bergner.
I'm going to shoot. I heard him turn the light on.
Okay, just calm down, okay? We don't want to do anything too rash. I mean, if he may not even know you're in there. Okay. And he's in front of your door there, or what light did he turn on?
Oh, light.
Okay.
He's turning the door now.
He's turning her door, okay. Is that him I hear?
Yep.
Okay, is there anything you can
What are you doing? Here, stop it! Stop it! Stop it!
Okay, he's in the room with her.
Stop it!
Yes.
Stop it!
Stop it!
Stop it! Stop it! Stop it! Please stop it! Just stop it!
Okay, they're almost there. They're almost there. He's...
Oh, my God!
Okay. Okay, is he still there? Where did he go?
Oh, my God!
Well, I told you it would get your attention. That was an actual 911 call. I got to make a couple of comments about that. Did you remember the point where the 911 operator said, I know it seems like a long time, it's only been a couple of minutes? It was about 4 minutes when she said that. Now, I have nothing against 911 operators. The lady was doing her job. The point is, that whole call, start to finish, was about 6 minutes. A lot can happen in 6 minutes, folks. The perpetrator can do a lot in 6 minutes. Thank God that lady had a gun. I'm pretty sure that perpetrator died. You know what? Probably good riddance if this guy was stalking her, which the news report said that the guy was stalking her. So, tell me something. How do the gun haters, how do they justify denying people like that lady on that call, how do they justify denying her the right to defend herself with a gun? Yet, I got to calm down here. Yet there are people who want to take that right away. And there are people who recently argued in the recent Supreme Court case McDonald versus Chicago. There were people that argue that that lady, if she was in the city of Chicago, would not have the right to shoot that guy. Can you believe that? I wanted you to listen to that. I don't know if you've heard that before, but even if you heard it before, you need to listen to it two or three times. Carry your guns, folks, and keep your guns ready to defend yourself in your home. All right, listener feedback here in segment number two. I got an email, a pretty cool email, and let's see here. It says, "Hello, Bob. Unfortunately, there are still some may issue states that effectively ban concealed carry." And his main point of his email to me, he uses the state of Maryland, for example. He must live there. It says, if you apply for a concealed carry weapons permit in Maryland and get denied, you can never apply again, and you must answer yes on any other state's questionnaire when they ask if you've ever been turned down for a CCW license. May issue is defined as demonstrating good and substantial need. He goes on to say, evidently my life or my family does not qualify as a good and substantial need, so I continue to try to get the law changed before I attempt to apply for one. And his username is RedDog124. Thank you for sending that to me, sir. You know, you're not the first person that has told me about Maryland. Apparently, I guess Maryland likes to put on paper that they have concealed carry, but effectively, I guess Maryland really doesn't. If they're a may issue state and they have that much discretion, then they're not really a concealed carry state. You see, this is the problem we have. For those of you who really think that we're completely winning the gun rights argument, think again. I'll submit to you, we're not really completely winning just yet. When the state can get away with making concealed carry so restrictive that most people cannot exercise that constitutional right that they have, when a state can get away with that, we still do not have our Second Amendment guaranteed to us. And the recent Supreme Court decision left way too much wiggle room for my comfort for states to do like what Maryland is doing. So, thanks for sending that, sir. Appreciate that. Keep these kinds of emails coming. I like this. Here's another one. Another listener by the name of Kent sent me a really cool article that's regarding the state of Utah. This was published on July 4th. Representative Steven Sandstrom, Republican from Orem, Utah, wants people in the state to be able to carry guns without concealed weapons permit. Constitutional carry. Yay, Arizona, for starting this whole thing. And I think this is a good thing. It looks like, as we expected, more and more states are trying to get on board with that. Representative Sandstrom says it does not say, he's referring to the Constitution here, the Constitution does not say you have the right to keep and bear arms as long as some pinhead from the federal government or your state government gives you that right. He said, well, I added the word pinhead, okay? He said, bearing arms means carrying them. Yes, it does. I agree with you, Representative Sandstrom from Utah. And he finishes up the article by saying, it's just like freedom of religion. You do not have to go out and get an exercise of religion card. That's true. That's true. I cannot disagree with that. And then this guy who emailed me this, Kent, he said he had a topic suggestion for me, so I'm going to go ahead and answer his question. His question is that he got his CCW permit, but his employer does not allow weapons in or on company property. And he said he's not very comfortable with leaving the gun in his car without a safe in the car. What do I suggest? That is a really tough question. I hate hearing this. I hate hearing when employers also take away the Second Amendment rights of their employees. Now, I understand nobody forces us to work anywhere. Okay? And I've heard really lousy answers to this argument. I've heard people tell other people with this same question, well, just go work somewhere else, right? Screw that employer, go work somewhere else. It's not that easy. It's not that easy for people to find jobs these days. It's not. It's with our economy the way it is, who wants to just give their boss the middle finger because they can't carry a gun at work? All right? I mean, I do not favor employers doing this this is a tough, tough question. Because I don't want to see you, Kent, I don't want to see you get fired because you take a gun on your employer's property. So I'll tell you what I would do. I would try to compromise as much as I can. I'm not saying go to your boss and try to negotiate, because that's probably going to be a losing proposition. This is what I would do. If there was a place I could store my handgun, not loaded, and feel safe about it, if there was a place near my workplace, maybe a storage locker of some kind, I don't know how far away from work you live, how far your commute is, or whatever. But if I could find some way, shape, or form, to put a firearm somewhere that's unloaded, safe, locked up, in a portable safe, I would unload it. I would lock it up somewhere where it's not on employees' property. And then as soon as I got off of work, I'd drive to the point where the gun is, retrieve it, and then carry it with me the rest of the way home and, you know, continue about the rest of my day or evening carrying my gun. But, you know, I mean, even that might be pretty impractical. I don't know. That's about all I can think of to answer this guy's question. Because shame on your employer for taking that right away from you, but unfortunately, employers are allowed to trample all over our Second Amendment rights like that. This is a tough question. If somebody can help this guy, if somebody can help me come up with an answer, if you're in this situation, please put some information on the Gun Rights Radio Network, on the Handgun World Show thread, or go ahead and use the comments section in the show notes of this episode posting on handgunworld.com. Real tough question. Thanks for sending it in, Kent. I wish I had a whole lot better answer for you than that, than what I just gave, but that's the best I can do with that one right now. Okay, let me, before I wrap up the show here, let me get to defensive accuracy again, which is what I started talking about, basically shooting him to the ground, the bad guy. And I'm going to kind of expand on what Rob from the Personal Armament Podcast covered in his episode back in April with his guest. I'd like to share with you some things that I've thought of here that I've made note of. The word defensive, what is the word defensive? When they say the word defensive accuracy, what is it? Okay, an attempt to define that. First of all, let me point out that a lot of people sometimes confuse accuracy with consistency. And here's what I mean by that. You can be consistently inaccurate. In other words, you could put a little small group in the target. You could be accurate. You could be shooting a one-inch group. But if your one-inch group is low and to the right, you're doing something wrong. Or if it's low and left, you're doing wrong. And, you know, you could fire 10 shots and put 9 of them inside of a two-inch group at 5 yards, low and left. That's a problem. That's consistency, but that's not accuracy. You're probably not trying to shoot low and left. You're probably shooting right for the bullseye, and your shots are going low and left. So there's some things you got to work on. Typically, it's trigger control. Okay. The best way I can define defensive accuracy, and it was sort of touched on in that other podcast, but in that is what a civilian can reasonably expect to shoot on the defensive, not on the offensive. Remember, you know, you don't have time to line up your shots. You're not going on the offensive like a military person in combat. Okay. So what can you reasonably expect when you're freaked out and you're under stress and the bullets are flying and the bad guy's trying to pummel you? What, you know, can you stop him? That's defensive accuracy. Now, I want to cover some ideas with you on how to stop a threat to you to your life and your limb as quickly as possible. A few things. First of all, in quickly stopping an attack. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on the details of the mechanics of how a human body works. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a physiologist. So I'm not going to go into a lot of details on how the body is brought to a halt. But I do want to point out some of the areas that when you shoot it, they have the greatest potential to stop somebody from continuing their attack. Okay, one area is in the neck. The area of the neck, where the neck pretty much meets the collarbone, is a pretty vulnerable area. The reason being is the trachea is there, and a very vital vascular system is there, as well as the central nervous system, the spinal column. That's unprotected. So the spinal column is unprotected, and a shot right there is probably going to have a pretty good chance of hitting the spinal column if you're accurate enough. And even a real weak, small caliber bullet that hits the CNS right there has a pretty high potential potential of incapacitating your attacker. That's the good part. Now, the bad part, it's hard to hit somebody there. All right, that's a pretty small target, especially if it's a, if the person is moving. And again, I've said it many times. If I said it once, I've said it 100 times. How many people are going to be standing there perfectly still, shooting at each other? Probably not. Probably both parties are going to be moving. So, due to the shot difficulty, it's tough to hit there. The good news is you're going to do some damage. The bad news is it's easy to miss. Okay, some of the most vital areas for handguns is a 4-inch circle around the eyes and another 4-inch circle right around the heart. So when you boil all this down, the most effective areas are 4-inch circles. This is why I say you don't have to be shooting 1-inch groups. It's nice, but you don't have to be. But just think about it. Shots in the lungs, shot in the heart area, obviously shot in the neck area, and of course, headshots. Now, you know, if you're within contact distance, if you're 3 or 4 feet, headshots are a little bit easier. But, you know, once you start, I mean, do this with a target. Start rolling the target out to 5 yards, 7 yards, 10 yards, 15 yards, and just start shooting at the neck area, or shooting headshots, and see how difficult it is. That's why I told you in that one IDPA match, I shot the whole stage headshots. And some of them was while I was moving, all right? I'm not trying to brag or anything. I just, when I got that reaction from the safety officer, when he says, well, why'd you do that? Now, I wasn't doing anything unsafe, okay? I was just slowing down trying to put my shots in the headshot part of the target. Why? Why do I want to do that? Because I want to practice shooting where I can get the greatest hits. Now, here's the way I figure it. I figure that if I train trying to hit that 4.5, 5-inch, 6-inch, whatever area size it is on the headshot of an IDPA target, if I can train to consistently hit that area, then no matter where on that bad guy's body that I aim, if I'm trying to put the shot there, I got a better chance of putting it there because that's the way I trained. All right, now, let me talk a little bit about penetration. I haven't spent a whole lot of time on this in any of my shows, but acceptable defensive penetration of your ammunition. You know, a lot of it has to do with the barrel length of your gun, of course, but a lot of us like to carry small guns with little 2.5-inch or 3-inch barrels and so forth. At typical distances, I think you're going to get decent penetration at typical handgun distances. You know, inside of 7 yards, no matter what your barrel length is, you're still probably going to get decent penetration. Of course, a 5-inch 1911 is going to generate more penetration than a small 2-inch snub-nose 38 revolver. You don't have to be a ballistics expert to figure that out, right? But generally accepted figures are 12 to 16 inches of penetration in ballistic gelatin. All right, 12 inches is considered accurate. 13 to 15, 16 inches, that's optimal. So keep that in mind when you're selecting your ammunition. You know, we all know that the more knowledge that you can get in any discipline, shooting, no matter what it is, the more knowledge you can get and the more that you practice good techniques, the more skilled you're going to become at doing that. Problem is there's a lot of bad information out there. There's a lot of bad information floating around in the internet, and it's so easy to get a book published these days that pretty much any joker can put words down on a page and make a book and sell it. And you know, folks, I want to be as accurate as I can on this podcast. And I know there's some of you probably listening to this that are very, very experienced shooters, experienced trainers, and feel free. If I'm off base on something, that's what the comment section is for. Set me straight. You know, send me a comment. Put it on the Gun Rights Radio Network forum or on the comments page of the Handgun World Show, and let me know, you know, where did I go wrong. But as I said in the beginning, the main purpose of this podcast that I want to do is to talk to you a little bit more in depth about defensive accuracy and how it applies to defensive shooting. So I also want to talk about real quick here before I let you go the balance between speed and accuracy. It's kind of a fine line there. It's kind of a tough balance between speed and accuracy. You got to have both to end a fight. All right, you want to place the hits as quickly as possible. That's speed. All right, you want to be able to fire as rapidly as you can, but you got to stay within the incapacitation zones, and that would be accuracy. So it means you can shoot a lot faster at bad breath distance and stay within the incapacitation zones a lot faster than you can at greater distance. So that makes sense, right? But maintaining that balance, that's what you should train for, I think, and that's tough. That's real tough, but I think that should be the goal of your defensive accuracy. So, some of the practical personal experience advice that I can give you on this is, at first, take your time. At first, go for accuracy. Speed will come. I'm a very impatient person, and I've struggled with this a lot. You know, I want to do well, and I want to do well right now. And that's just one of my big weaknesses has been that I'm just not real patient. And so I have to learn to slow down and let the accuracy come. Let the trigger control happen, the proper sight alignment, the good grip, the good stance, the good thumbs forward grip in order to get the follow-up shots necessary so that the accuracy comes. The speed, you know, and this is something I really didn't believe. I got to tell you, when my first trainer told me that, you know, he said, slow down, concentrate on accuracy, Bob. After you get the accuracy, the speed will come. I didn't believe him. But he's right. He's right. And, you know, I have videos of me shooting 5 years ago, and they pale in comparison to me shooting today. And I'm no expert shooter. I got a long way to go. Check my scores at Texas IDPA match. I didn't set the world on fire. But I would say I'm probably better than the average Joe on the street that doesn't have any training. So, but I have a long way to go. I have a lot to learn doing podcasts like this and researching this and getting out there and shooting. There's no substitute for it, folks, I got to tell you. But as I close, let me just remind you, practice shooting in different positions like standing, sitting, kneeling, prone, on your side, on your left side, on your right side, strong hand only, weak hand only, from cover, from concealment, all this kind of stuff. Everything I've talked about over and over again, train on that. Okay, and acquiring accuracy in defensive shooting, it does take a lot of practice. It's not easy, but it's well worth it. It can save your life, folks. It can save your life, and it can save the life of another. And there's just no substitute for going out there and getting a good trainer. And, you know, find somebody that's a reputable trainer, Suarez, Tactical Response, LFI, Front Sight, all the good ones out there. Pay the money. It's worth it. So, with that, I'm going to go ahead and close. I just want to ask you a question. What's your life worth? And I want to thank two people for inspiring this podcast. Listening to Eric talk about, you know, quit buying guns and get some training, and then listening to the Personal Armament podcast and listening to that guy talk about defensive accuracy, I had to stick my two cents in there, and I had to give you some of my personal experience. So, thanks for tuning in. I'm Bob Main. This is the Handgun World Show. And why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Catch you next time. Bye-bye. I'm a desperate man. Send lawyers, guns, and money. This shit has hit the fan. Guns and money.